and welcome to Quality of Life Radio, hosted by Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazines.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Big Blend Radio's Quality of Life show. Today, we're very excited to chat with Kelly Skoloda. She is the author of A Way Back to Health, 12 Lessons from a Cancer Survivor. It is out now, and you can go to her website, awaybacktohealth.com. And that's Kelly with an EY, because you never know. And hopefully I even pronounced your last name right, Kelly. Welcome
to
the show.
You did. Thank you, Lisa. Well done.
Oh, good. You know, because I always, you know, I give everybody their own name sometimes too, you know, so it happens. But good to have you on the show. And I know before we hit the record button, I was just saying, you know, it's so important what you've done, writing your story and also others, because going through something like cancer, especially colon cancer, nobody wants to talk about that. I think when someone's going through it, they resonate more with someone who has been through it and other stories. And everyone's story is different, like you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. It's true. I think what I found out is that personal stories really seem to be strong motivators to help people do things like get screened or encourage someone else to go get a screening or treatment. So, you know, I've seen that dynamic in action firsthand.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, like I was saying, colon cancer, people don't want to get screened for it. And I think it's, they're working hard on even having like self-tests, you know, tests you can do at home, I think, for people to do it.
And the screening guidelines have recently changed from age 50 to age 45. So because they have seen so many younger people getting colon cancer. In fact, when I was diagnosed, I said to my doctor, what's going on here? I don't have any of the normal, triggers or factors that would come into play, diet and previous health problems and things. And the doctor said, it's really just, it's age related now. People are getting colon cancer younger and younger. So even if you don't have other physical problems or health problems that might have traditionally been associated with colon cancer, just being over 45 now is a factor.
Oh, man. Yeah, we lost a friend to it a few years back. And she didn't drink, smoke, healthy. No. I mean, she was probably, you know. She looked at us because we love our wine and she's like, girls, you know, she was out in nature all the time, hiking, you know, rock hounding. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and we're like, how did that happen to her of all people, know, and it still makes no sense, but she went through a lot. And, you know, I wonder, is that the kind of the first thing you go is why? Why me? Because it doesn't feel like it could help happen to, you know. Us as individuals, it's like, it's someone else. Why me?
Right. I don't know if I asked why out of the gate. I mean, when you hear, I went in for my first routine colonoscopy screening, and I remembered kind of coming out of the haze of the anesthesia and hearing a tone of voice with the doctors and people talking around me that made me think something was wrong. I didn't even know yet. Mm. And then when I came out of it, and the doctor started talking about going to see an oncologist and, having surgery. And I still was in this haze. So it really makes your head spin. So even before I got to why, it was kind of just this head spinning maze of things that you had to start to navigate almost immediately before you were even prepared for it. That just, you know, kind of puts you right into the healthcare system at a point that you've never been before. So it really does make your head spin. And that's what I realized first. I don't know if I got to the point of why me, because, you know, you read the statistics after you're diagnosed and it is so pervasive. You have no idea unless you or someone close to you have experienced it. So it is just colon cancer is a very pervasive type of cancer. One of the top in the world, is affecting more and more people younger and younger. So that's what really struck me when I was diagnosed.
Wow. And then also, you know, you hear about it and you like all of a sudden now we're in the medical system. Like you said, okay, now here it goes. Navigate the world of medicine. I mean, Nancy and I, we've been caregivers to elder family, and even with each other going in, we got to this point of record mm-hmm. what your doctors are saying, or, you know, even for yes. the patient, the caregiver, mm-hmm. write it down. It becomes a full-time mm-hmm. job. And reading your story,
for sure.
you were launching a business at the same time. Then you've got your own personal, mm-hmm. Your own personal what's going on with this. And then the medical system, because that to me is probably one of the hardest parts of going through anything medical. Mm-hmm. It sucks.
It really is, Lisa. And I think your suggestion to record everything is a really smart one. In the book, I actually dig in a couple of chapters about both doing your homework and then keeping your records and keeping logs with your questions. I know there are a lot of electronic records and there are patient portals. I have found that when you're dealing with multiple health systems, those things might not necessarily talk to each other. So to your point, it's always helpful for you to keep your own records. It's one of the things I really advocate for. Every time I went in, I had my folder with all of my hard copy records, my screenings, everything mm-hmm. in one place. And sometimes I was the keeper of records more than even the health system, because different health systems may not talk to one another the way you want. So recording, keeping all of your questions in one place. And even when you go in for appointments, you think that you know what you want to ask and you understand, but you get in there and it's really unnerving. Mm-hmm. So I always had someone else with me to be an extra set of eyes and ears, my mom, mm-hmm. my husband. And I also wrote down everything in advance. And so when I went to the appointment, I checked off the questions as I got answers to them. And then I also wrote down additional questions if the doctor or nurse was talking, and I didn't want to interrupt them. But at the end, I had answers to everything I needed. And if I didn't, I called back, I dug in a little bit more. So your suggestion is really well taken.
Yeah, having somebody go with you is really, in my book, that's premium, because in a way, the healthcare system can at times be like going to a restaurant where it's get them in and get them out as fast as possible. Not right. saying all of it's like that, but enough of it's like that to take someone else with you.
Yeah,
and
I think
that surprised as how different you hear things.
It's true. I think that's a great tip. And as I said, I always tried to take someone with me to my most important appointments mm-hmm. because it is difficult to navigate. They're introducing a lot of different terminology, things you probably have never heard before, and you just aren't yourself. Even if you're mm-hmm. kind of normally in control, educated, all of that gets thrown out the window when you're in a situation that's life-threatening.
Well, and it's, you have to undress usually.
That's exactly how it's going to go. You're undressed.
Yeah, as soon as you have to undress, you were already so vulnerable that your mind doesn't work exactly the same.
That's a really interesting connection that I actually hadn't thought of before, but you're right. You're already vulnerable, and that makes you so much more vulnerable, just your physical, state of undress. You're right.
Mm. What, when you talk about taking, your husband, your mom with you, what about, connecting online? I know this all started with your article on medium.com, and I'm gonna go right on there now. Like, this is interesting how you got so much feedback, and those mediums all connected with Twitter, and then you've got LinkedIn and Facebook groups. Did you join like a bunch of Facebook groups too to kind of field, or this was you just really letting people know this is what I'm going through, and next thing you know, everyone's connecting with you?
Right. And it was really, Lisa, a series of things that happened. When it first happened to me, I'm a private person by nature, so I really kind of kept everything to myself. But then once I started to get through it and I knew I had to have surgery, and I was running a business at the same time. You mentioned I had started my own business about 6 months before. I felt like I really needed to let people know that I was going through something that, may change my behavior, my availability. So I did write an article and published it on Medium. And I was really taken aback by the response that I got. both people who knew me and strangers who would reach out and say, I'm so glad you told this story. It made me go get my screening, or I'm so glad you told this story. I've been after my mom, my sister, my dad to do this for so long. Your story was really the impetus for what helped me take action. And so I kind of just tucked that in the back, you know, of my head somewhere. And I had written a previous book. And so I guess I am always in my mind writing a book about something, right? And so I just started to kind of jot notes. And then after I went through this whole process, and I was so surprised with everything that I went through and learned. And then when I got people's reactions, I thought, you know, maybe there's something here, either a series of stories or maybe a book, I don't know. And as I started to talk to other survivors and hear what they've gone through and how much they've learned, I really was convinced that there was a book in the making. And so put all of that collective wisdom together, mine. And then when my editor first looked at the book, she said, this is great. And what would make it even better is to hear other people's stories. So that's when I started to reach out on Facebook and LinkedIn and other social networks, and was able to get a collection of other survivor stories to really add a lot of texture and depth to, you know, how I thought about it. So it really has a very strong, I think, community approach in the book, where it's kind of my story as the, you know, underpinning for the learnings, but bringing in other survivor stories to really give a lot of different approaches.
I think that's important right now, especially community. You know, here we have going through COVID, and I have a friend she said it was the year it wasn't the year I survived COVID. It was the year I kicked cancer's ass. She just went through breast cancer, and she got through it. And she was talking about, like, I kicked cancer in the ass and I'm ready to roll. But she also got this community, and you weren't able to really, you know, during COVID, be able to be with people, especially going through cancer in a pandemic, being able to, you know, have someone really help her with her hair and all kinds of things. And Facebook and her friends became such a huge part of it. And I think when you're talking about a book having a community feel, that's something someone may really need right now. Like, Absolutely. Even, you know, when you're going through something like cancer, even now, you have to be really careful, you know, no matter what you're going through. It could be all any kind of medical issue.
You're right. And back to your starting premise, when you connect with people and their stories, it really is tremendously helpful. It's not just reading the statistics. It's not just looking at the medical information, but really understanding, what someone else has done. To your point about breast cancer, I had a good friend, a client of mine, actually a woman who went through breast cancer and founded an organization as a result of it called Cancer Be Glammed, Lisa Lurie.
She wrote
the forward to the book. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was working with her before I was diagnosed, which I think is, you know, a miracle. And after I started going through things, she said, you may want to keep working, but make sure you leave enough flexibility in your day so that if you can't do it, you're too tired, you can't take something on, you don't want to, you know, paint yourself into a corner. And so just listening to a story and an experience from someone like that who went through it really stuck with me and was really helpful, and more helpful than, you know, just reading something kind of, that you don't associate with, or that doesn't resonate with you. Those kinds of stories kind of stick in the back of your mind, and you're able to reflect on them.
It's a human touch.
Yeah. And I think stories that you relate to help you actually go and talk to other people. Because sometimes you're just not really ready to talk to people.
No, it's true. There are moments you go in and out of moments where you want to talk, and times when you don't want to talk. Some of the stories that were shared with me, for the book, I thought were really interesting and touching, and brought up things that I had never thought about before. I mean, for instance, I have another friend, Andrea, who went through breast cancer years ago. And as I was writing the book, I had never even thought about the financial implications of having cancer, even though I was getting dozens of bills come into the house. And I mean, it would blow your mind how much these bills are, even with good insurance, right? Well, I hadn't even thought about introducing that in the book until talking to my friend Andrea. And she said, you know, she really worked with a financial counselor at the hospital. And that counselor told her, take the bills in and then just put them aside until you're ready to deal with them. They will wait. Like, don't let that worry you. And I thought, that's so important. I didn't know that when I was going through it. Mm-hmm. But to add that kind of dimension to how you deal with it and that reality, I thought was really helpful in a story and something I've never read or seen elsewhere.
No, that's huge.
It is huge because medical bills are absolutely way out there.
They're way out of line. They're out of line. I'm sorry.
It is just, yeah, we lived in England where for a couple of years where their healthcare system, you just walk in, right. You don't really pay anything ever. It's the greatest system ever.
But that was way back then. I think you still do a little bit.
I don't
now,
know what they do now, but you know, it was, and then you come here. And I mean, honest to gosh, the copay is even crazy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you get the first sight, when Lisa broke your arm.
Yeah, I had to have surgery and had a rod put in my arm.
It.
My blood test, I think, was like one part was $14,000 for this.
Yeah. It was like $22,000.
It was like,
this,
I know, like, just my blood
what
work.
What did you
I'm
do?
Like,
buy a mansion?
Right.
You know, I was really young and I was like, we just got back to this country and I wasn't ready for this, you know, I was like 22 or something. And next thing you know, there was actually help. And we were starting our business at this point.
Yeah,
and
we're
like,
oh my gosh,
that's really great. Good job, Lisa. You know, but the stress,
crazy.
I think when you're not well and you're trying to heal and going through all of that in the medical system itself, and then the financial thing, mm-hmm. the stress of that does not help your body.
Or
your attitude.
Yeah, it really does weigh on you. And when you're like the two of you or like me, you know, you're running your own business, you know, that complicates things on top of it. I think in thinking through running my own business, one of the things that really helped me was getting up every day and getting dressed and putting on some makeup and combing my hair and just making myself look like I, you know, wanted to look. Was helpful. And in the book, I call it fake it till you make it. But what helped me was doing that. And then I would get up and work. And when I looked good, I felt a little bit better. So that's another one of the things I advocate for. I know there are other people that I talked to who said they prefer just to stay in their pajamas all day and rest. And that, you know, that's fine too. Everyone's different. Mm-hmm. For me, it really did help to try and look as good as I could considering the circumstances, and that helped me feel better too.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I continued to go to client meetings and, you know, as work as much as I could. I found it rewarding and distracting, which, you know, both helped me.
It's a sense of control too. It's positive and it puts you into a survivor place. And that's what I love about your book too, is you're talking about survivor stories. So there's that real hope element that it is possible to get through this. And this is how people did get through this, you know?
Right. So you're right. Control, I think, is a really key word because as soon as you're diagnosed, things seem to spin out of control. But the more that you can do to put yourself in control, you know, doing your homework, getting yourself dressed, speaking up, trusting your instincts, the things that you can control that you do, it does kind of give you a sense of power over your illness, even though, you know, that may not in reality be the case, but it helped me regain control and that helped me feel better.
Mm. And so also going and continuing with work, that to me is like you've got function. You're telling your body, I've got function. I've got things to do.
Yeah.
I think there's this communication. Did you have a lot of internal dialogue with your brain and your body? Like, come on, let's get through this. We can do this. Like more community, you know, we all have self-talk, but then it becomes like your body becomes a team in a way. I don't know.
Right.
I've just, even the medical things I've been through in life, suddenly my body's like, okay, dudes, we're working on this together. We're going to get there, you know, suddenly. And, and then I go, then things get better and you go, why don't we have that? I don't know. There's a better communication when things go wrong with your body that you wonder, why do we not do that all the time?
Right, right. I do think I'm a big person like you. I think action begets action, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. And at the end of every chapter, in fact, I include action steps because I think every step along the way, when I took action, something good happened out of it. Whether that was speaking up for myself or getting dressed every day or just walking around the yard and trying to look for something that was, you know, a miracle in Mother Nature,
yeah.
You know, a butterfly or a flower, just those mm-hmm. small actions can have really profound impact.
Mm, I like that. Nature is very healing.
And, it is.
You know, mm-hmm. and looking for the beauty of things, that's another thing that keeps you going. You know, it's like, it's still out there.
It's too easy to just give up, in a sense, if you don't start looking outside of yourself for reasons not to give up.
I think that's a great point. And if you just take one small step, I mean, an example, I like to golf and my family golfs. And when I had my surgery and I was going through treatment, I just physically couldn't do it. So I would ride in the golf cart and I would just putt. And then a few weeks later, I would putt and I would chip. I still couldn't swing a club with enough energy to, you know, to use a driver. But I just built my way up until I could, you know, get back into golfing. Yeah. When I came home from surgery, I was on a fast protocol. And I said to my doctor, my daughter's dance recital is this Saturday night. I want to be there. And he said, okay, well, that's really, really rapid response protocol. We'll see what we can do. And sure enough, I was discharged from the hospital that Saturday. My husband drove me right up to the entrance to the theater where my daughter would have her performance. I hobbled out of the car, got in the back seat, watched her dance, and then had to leave right away. But just, you know, kind of one step at a time and taking that action to do things that are important to you.
Mm, yeah, I love that. Great. Any mm-hmm. tips for, you know, you're talking about your family, you know, helping your husband, driving you there. You know, when there's a diagnosis of cancer and with your mm-hmm. friends or family, the other side of us go, okay, how do we handle this? How do we communicate? And that sometimes mm-hmm. is a really difficult, you know, can be a shutdown. Like we could say the wrong thing. You know, there's right. that whole, any tips on mm-hmm. that, of that communication part?
Yeah, I think, I have a whole chapter in the book about talking to friends or family or not. And I think everyone is different. It's interesting that you know, people can say the dumbest things, even if you're people close to you, whenever there's a situation like that. And there's actually some science behind that, that, you know, people want to kind of distance themselves from what's happening. So they might say something that, you know, kind of dumb because it kind of puts some distance between them and that kind of condition. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, in my family, my kids were terrific. Kids are so resilient, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they kind of go along with life and that kept me going. So, you know, encouraging your family to kind of just go, you know, keep their life up, helped me. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things I learned from other survivors was focusing on the today. So, you know, if you ask someone how they're doing, they might think they're not doing well long-term, right? They have a long road to hoe. But if you ask, how are you doing today? Or how are you feeling today? Or is there something I can do to help you today? No one can really argue with that. It's not offensive in any way. And in fact, you know, kind of lands pretty nicely. So I think, you know, back to your point about tips, let your family go on with their life as much as possible. You know, bring as much normalcy into the family unit as you can, and then just encourage, you know, a focus on how you're doing today and what someone can do to help you today. I was lucky enough to have some people who would cook some meals for my family. And at first I felt really awkward about that. Like, oh, yeah. I can't take care of my family. I can't even cook meals mm-hmm. for them. But when you're at a point where you feel like you just can't even do that, and someone kindly says, you know, can I drop off dinner for you on Thursday? It's like, it's one of the nicest things I think someone can do. So,
and for your family too, because there's that other side of it. It's not just the patient, it's the family around them immediately. Mm-hmm. Everybody's in a different world now because you're all connected.
So true. Someone I interviewed said, know, when someone in the family gets cancer, everyone in the family gets cancer. And, you know, to some degree, that's true because everyone in the family has to deal with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dinner, and you really may not want to be around food, depending on where you are.
That's so true. I mean, that it wasn't the cancer itself, but the chemo that really knocked it out of me. And it does make everything taste off. In your body, at least, you know, the chemo, the way it affected me and my digestive system, it inflamed everything. So it was very hard for me to eat. Some of the things that were my favorites, that nice cup of coffee in the morning, couldn't do it. Someone said to me, don't eat your favorite things when you're getting chemo treatment because it leaves this residual bad feeling about that food. So I actually avoided my favorites so that I didn't get that. But the chemo created huge blisters on my feet, a neuropathy that I couldn't even reach into the refrigerator because my fingers were so affected by the cold. I would go into a grocery store. I had to wear a hat and gloves. Just all these really strange things that affect you in a very significant way, especially during chemo.
Thing too, you know, when people are also on medications, it affects you. You could have a negative response, but it does affect emotions too. And then, you know, that's one thing too, when you are going through something, to let people know that this is what's going on, to have a better level of patience with coworkers, colleagues, clients, because you never know what someone's going through. Someone can, you know, react to something completely what we would think is irrational, but it's really not if you don't know what their situation is or how they're feeling. Medicine does some weird stuff.
It does some weird stuff.
And emotionally, I know my arm's nothing compared to cancer, but the medicine they gave me really didn't do well with me. And I was a basket case. One minute I was higher than a kite. The next minute I was lower than low. I mean, like not good. Like the emotional thing was.
It's so true. And medication, it causes side effects, and then you have to, you know, they want you to take more medication to treat the side effects.
I know.
I tried to take as few medicines as possible approach. Again, everyone's different, but I was very cognizant of the dangers of opioids. And so I talked to the anesthesiologists and the doctors ahead of every procedure and tried to avoid opioids at every point. In fact, even post-surgery, I was put on a fast protocol, which avoided use of opioids. And so I really tried to stay away from things that I think could have caused even more problems.
Yeah.
I try to use nutrition and exercise as healing, even more than medicines. And when I was able, I used integrative medicine as opposed to pharmaceutical medicine so that I took those things to combat side effects that didn't, you know, cause more problems. So I was really cognizant of any kind of more natural ways to deal with it too.
I had a friend who had brain cancer, and they took a tumor out of her head. And you know, it's just, she was so young. We're like, how the hell did that happen? You know, it's like, you know. So her wife put up a support page for her on Facebook just for that, and it was her healing group. And every day, I would go and post her flowers every single day. And her wife said they went to a shaman. And I know everyone's going to go, okay, that's kooky, but you know what? Each to everyone's thing. They obviously the medical route and went through all of it. And she said, the one shaman said, don't hope, already visualize a perfect health. And that's what I've done from now on. She survived and she's healthy and happy and rebuilding houses. So she's, you know, really, really kicks butt, you know, and she went through it. And they said, always just envision the perfect health. And see it as it really is there. And from there,
I think that's really good advice.
Yeah. Yeah. And she survived, and she, like I said, she's kicking butt. And I think there's some truth to that, to see the positive.
I think there's truth to that just in life, right?
I mean,
visualize the outcome. And I think, it's more likely to happen. So I think that's really, really good advice.
Oh, wow.
I think your body can tell way more than we give it credit for, you know? So I think your body It's a living being, obviously. So why can't it visualize?
Yeah, I think you're right there. In fact, that's one of the reasons why I focused on trusting your instincts in the book too, because I think people think they need to just think about the medical part of it and what's fact. But I think when you really get in tune with your body and what you're thinking and feeling, it helps you move in the right directions, you know? And if something isn't right, then, and your body's letting you know, then you need to make a change. I'll give you an example. I was in the middle of chemo, and it was determined to be, you know, the best course of chemo for me. But about a month into it, I felt like I was going to die. I couldn't get off the floor. It was horrible. And I would, you know, talk to the oncologist, and they said, well, you know, that's to be expected, and people go through things like that. And so I lived with it for a little bit. And then I thought, this just isn't right. I cannot do this anymore. And finally, you know, kind of pressed the doctor to see me and talk to me about it. And as it turned out, my symptoms were, you know, at about 99% of the bell curve. So they were extremely severe. And I, at that point, needed a change in plan. And I had to actually go off of chemo for a little bit to let my body get to a point where it could receive more chemo. And I think, you know, some people just kind of, you know, if you're not listening to your body, you just kind of soldier on and think, well, this is what the doctors told me to do, but you have to listen to what you're feeling and thinking to see what's best for you.
And it's okay to get a second opinion.
I think it's crucial. I know my dad was diagnosed with a terminal illness and told he had 5 years to live. 20 years later, he's still alive, and he died from something completely different. And I think he died actually as a reaction to a lot of the steroids he'd been given over the years. So, you know, you have to weigh in on that, but you really do have to trust yourself.
You do. And getting a second opinion, I think, is vital. I didn't know that until I started down this process, but, you know, I went to the first surgeon and he seemed fine and competent and good, but there was something gnawing at me that didn't seem right. And I thought, I need to get a second opinion. So I did. I went to a different health system, a different surgeon. And here, this surgeon did this surgery 5 times a day instead of 5 times a month. And there were just kind of things that I saw and felt that made me think this was the right decision. And I also had kind of my silver bullet question I talk about in the book. And that is, I asked doctors for their cell phone number, if I needed it. And the first physician said, you know, if you really need it, I'll give it to you. And the second physician, when I asked for it, took out a piece of paper and wrote it down and said, here's my cell phone, call me anytime. And I thought, not that I'm going to bother this doctor unless I really need to, but it was a sign to me of how they, you know, how they would care for you.
Yeah,
and so that second opinion was absolutely positively critical. And that was the route that I went.
You know, and this brings to, you know, the second opinion. A friend just went through that with childbirth because she had complications, and it was really a big deal. And she just, you know what, this guy's charging so much money and didn't want her to have a female doula. And she's like, screw you. She just eventually, and she's like, sweet little late. She's the sweetest. She's like, oh, you see her, and she's like a little flower. And I'm like, you said screw you. I had to just kind of don't that because it, she was almost feeling bullied in a way. She wrote a whole blog about this. It was almost like being bullied, like this is the way. And then eventually she just met it. It was just this serendipitous connection to somebody else. Like you talk about finding these miracles all throughout this one connection, and it gave her the strength to turn around like, no, I'm not going with you anymore. And she's fine. Her baby's fine. Everyone's fine. But
we followed her instincts. Right?
Yeah. Because I think you really have to, and the medical system, it should be a caring, I don't think that a lot of the medical folks in their healthcare workers and doctors and everyone, they go in with something positive, wanting to help and heal, but sometimes along the way
get tired.
Who could blame them with everything they're dealing with? I mean, I felt really blessed in the end that I had amazing doctors, but even more amazing than the doctors were the nurses, and the oncology nurses that I encountered were so caring and so careful and sensitive. And I had one nurse who was assigned to me for the duration of my chemo after I had the problems. And so she knew what would bother me and what worked for me. And so that really helped me, you know, that kind of familiarity with someone who knew my body and, you know, what it needed.
And I think it's really, really important that you educate yourself on what is happening, because then you're in a position to really ask the right questions at the right time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think, you know, the first chapter in my book is about doing your homework. Mm-hmm. I too, I know your proponents that education is the best weapon against, you know, fear and ignorance. Mm-hmm. And I found the same. It's so true. You know, forewarned is forearmed. So mm-hmm. if you do your homework and you know what you're getting into, not only do you feel like you're in more control, but it mm-hmm. really does help you navigate everything. It's just like, we get different opinions on, you know, what shoes we're going to buy or what, you know, anything that we're going to get, but yet in healthcare, we seem to just take for granted that wherever we go, they know best. So I'm really a proponent of educating yourself and doing your research. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. With your book title being A Way Back to Health, which I love, I see this also being utilized by folks going through other issues, whether it's heart disease or diabetes, you know, multiple sclerosis. Did I say that? Sclerosis. I got friends who will nail me on that. But, you know, it's I think it goes with everything. I know this is specifically cancer, but I believe people can use this to help go through anything else that they're dealing with.
I think that's really perceptive, Lisa. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in thinking about that, I would agree. I think each of the chapters of the book, you know, in some cases you could swap out cancer for another very serious health problem. And it mm-hmm. would probably be, you know, stand up to that too. I mean, things like doing your homework and speaking up for yourself and trusting your instincts and, you know, getting dressed every day to make yourself feel better. I mean, all of those things are true, I think, no matter what your health issues are.
Well, and you could say the same about if you're going through, say, some kind of emotional trauma or even mm-hmm. financial problems, dealing with it and taking ownership of it and making a plan and following it and educating yourself on whatever the problem is way better than just let me sit back and see what happens.
You can have your moment. Yeah. You can have your moment of grief or, you know, upset about it. You know, I have a friend who is, you know, in like a lifelong medical, you know, it's a lifelong thing that she's dealing with. And she talks about having to grieve to get past what was to move forward, allowing yourself this grieving process. It's like the old self is dead. Now you've got a new self and kind of look at it as a metamorphosis. And I think that's really true. And like my favorite quote is Joan Baez says, action is the antidote to despair. So you can have your moment of despair. I believe you have to have that, because if you don't, it's going to always just sit on your shoulder and keep going. Nye, nye, nye.
Then you're probably in denial.
Yeah. You can't. Mm-hmm. And eventually you're going to get bed sores if you don't get up and do something about it.
Right. And I think there are many moments of despair and many moments where you question yourself or, you know, kind of need to settle and grieve. But I really found that at the end of the day, advocating for myself and taking action were the best things that I could do and really helped me get through it. So you have to cut yourself a break too. There will be many moments where you just need to kind of sit back or cry. I mean, I cried a lot.
Yeah, I bet.
But then to move forward, just, you know, advocacy and action were the keys for me.
Is that also important for immediate family and friends to also kind of be part of that and even help with the research and the documentation? Having that trust. Some of us are in families that you don't want them, you know, hold that opinion there. This, again, self-advocacy, no matter what, right? But I think there's also, you know, there's families where the children are so young, they may be very scared. You know, I look at what kids must be feeling now with COVID and climate change. And, you know, there's got a level of fear. And I see a lot of youth turn it around also and go, okay, we're going to do something about it. And they're the ones who seem to be happier and healthier moving forward. So it's very much like what you're saying, take action, but I think
become a role model.
But the family itself, the family unit, has to kind of adopt that too.
They do. Yeah, I think you're right. And I think, you know, when you're going through things like that, you need to keep people who are helpful and healing close to you and people who aren't not, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. You really do. That's a really important point, because somehow one person that can be negative will destroy the last three people who were positive in your mind. So you just need to distance.
Yes. And focus on the positivity or, you know, whatever is helping you heal.
Yeah.
That's everything, really. These are really strong life lessons.
They are.
I think these kind of things happen. They're a big scare, but they're huge life lessons. They really are. Thank you so much, Kelly. I am so excited that your book is out. Folks, are you going to do another one, do you think?
Another book?
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I always have a couple of books. I'm that type of person, kind of percolating somewhere. But books are also labors of love, right? Mm-hmm. And they take a lot of time and a lot of resources. So we'll see. Let's get this one out there into the world. Mm-hmm. And I really thank the both of you for, you know, taking an interest in the book and asking such, you know, such thoughtful questions.
Well, thank you, everyone. Bye-bye. Kelly Skoloda. Again, it's A Way Back to Health, 12 Lessons from a Cancer Survivor. It's out now. Go to awaybacktohealth.com and get it from your favorite book provider. Take care, Kelly. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, Nancy. Mm-hmm.